sang out a song of the soul.
And we'll sing this song. Why don't you sing along? And we can sing.
Music has an incredible ability to proclaim the soul's language beyond what mere words can speak. That is what we seek as we invite our guests to share their song of the soul. Be it joy and laughter, sorrow and tears, awe and insight, or deepest devotion, as we visit and listen, we are all part of a spiritual voyage called Song of the Soul. Last week, we got very engrossed in our conversation with David Rovics, so much so that we ended up doing two shows of interviewing in one long session. So we have David back this week for Song of the Soul to provide five more songs in the remainder of the conversation we had last week. In case you don't know David Rovics and his music, I'll recap a little. He's produced something like 50 albums, and while his style is mostly folk-based, he does some songs which are folk punk, metal, and rock, but there were also a couple years when he was mainly making children's music. First and foremost, he's a powerful voice for protest, activism, social change, and he aims the best he can to make this a better world. We interviewed him back 18 years ago, so this is part two of his second Song of the Soul. He again joins us from Portland, Oregon, and I'll ask him the same question I shared at the end of last week's episode. How many of your close friends are MAGA?
I know a lot of people who actually are coming out of this kind of background in terms of having had very positive impressions of Donald Trump when he first ran. It's a surprising number of people that most but not all have been more recently horrified by Trump's imperial turn, but I also still know some people who are right along with him on his Islamophobic insanity and are posting stuff vilifying Islam on a regular basis. You know, if somebody's attacking me personally, you know, for some reason, vilifying me personally or trying to get cancel my career or get gigs canceled or whatever, then I have no tolerance for that. But if people are expressing their different opinions in online, and for me, that's not a reason to stop communicating with them, not at all. And I never make negative comments on anybody's posts on any social media platform, and I never have. Because I think it's a really dumb thing to do and completely unproductive. All it does is alienate you from other people and alienate them from you without doing anything useful. Having never engaged in that practice, I have managed to keep friends from different backgrounds despite them knowing, you know, about my opinions. And what that says is also that there are a lot of people out there who, despite me having my obvious opinions that are really obvious to hear in my songs and all my essays and whatever else, there's a lot of people who disagree with me and yet are interested in maintaining a connection with me anyway. You know, it's not unique to me or to any, you know, anyone, political, one particular political orientation. There's a lot of people who are interested in knowing each other, even if they have disagreements with each other, profound disagreements.
Well, let's see if the rest of your songs achieve that same goal of keeping us together. Sometimes it's hard when you point at someone bleeding in front of you. It's hard to for some people to maintain their neutrality in the same direction.
Oh, yeah. No. The songs can either they can win hearts and minds, or they can completely alienate people. You know, for sure, they're very provocative, you know, in all kinds of ways, no doubt about it, which is not the same kind of provocative as, you know, personally attacking someone. You know, that's a different kind of provocation.
Sure. So let's do some more music. Looking at what we need in this world from David Rovics. Where do we go?
The next one is They All Sang the Internationale, and this is another of my sort of, obviously, I don't have any hits, so let's be clear about that, but, you know, I've never had a hit, but, you know, I get about 2 million songs streamed a year on the various platforms, and so you can see, like, which ones are more popular. It's pretty obvious, and this is one of them, and I wrote this one in 2014 or so. I was having a walk around Hamburg, Germany on the night of May 8th, 2014 or thereabouts, and it was when they sort of celebrate, I guess, if that's the word, the defeat of Germany in World War II. And there was a group doing a tour of notable events that had happened in Hamburg during the rise of Hitler in terms of resistance. And that's when I realized that one of the folks I was walking with had an amazing family history. And I wrote a song about her grandfather, and then I wrote a song about her grandmother. And this is a song about her grandmother, who shares her name, Katharina Jakob, who survived the Second World War. Her husband, Franz Jakob, was a communist on the city council in Hamburg, and he was put to death in 1944. And she was at the Ravensbrück concentration camp in 1945 when it was liberated by the Red Army.
So we're going to start out with that one. They all sang the Internationale. And we're going to go right into When the Workers of the World Combine. What do you want to say about that to prep people?
My favorite holiday is May Day, May 1st. That's when in so many countries, they're all waving red flags and proclaiming the power of the workers. And, you know, for that one day of the year in a lot of countries, you could imagine the revolution has already happened. And then, they have lots of festivals with music. And so I love May Day. It's like Christmas for left-wing musicians. So one day during the pandemic, I wrote a song about it, which was on a May Day when I was stuck at home because of the pandemic. So I wrote a song about it instead of playing at any of those May Day events.
So by the end of these two songs, we'll make it to When the Workers of the World Combine. But we'll start off right away with They All Sang the Internationale, David Rovix.
Katharina Jakob, long before she took that name, was organizing workers in Hamburg just the same. Organizing beneath the flag of deepest red, new dawn of peace and freedom clearly shining in her head. Katharina Jakob first was sent to jail when the trappings of democracy all began to fail. She was frequently arrested in and out of custody while her first husband was in hiding from the Nazis. Katharina Jakob was acquitted of a crime, but the Gestapo had the last word and they weren't finished with her this time. She was sent to Ravensbrück, a killing hunger at her side. She heard of the execution, how her second husband died. For Katharina Jakob, the end was close at hand. She was on a death march with a ragged, starving band, marching through a forest, being led by the SS. What would happen hours later seemed impossible to guess. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Katharina Jakob thought about her children and the friends and comrades taking care of them, not knowing yet if any of them survived, not knowing that soon she'd see her daughters both alive. Katharina Jakob watched the German soldiers flee, streaming from the east, that's what she was seeing. Allied bombers flew above them, she thought they all might die, and then soon there was the silence of all the SS men. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Katharina Jakob saw red flags flapping in the breeze above the Russian tanks, and she fell upon her knees. And so many different voices in so many different tongues sang the most beautiful song that could ever have been sung. In German, Lithuanian, in Polish, and in Dutch, a myriad of melodies has never had been such. In Russian and in Yiddish, Italian and French, emerging from the forests beneath the trench. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Völker hört die Signale auf zum letzten Gefecht. Die Internationale erkämpft das Menschenrecht. Völker hört die Signale auf zum letzten Gefecht. Die Internationale erkämpft das Menschenrecht. Of the year on the 1st of May, known around the world as International Workers' Day. You'll still see people marching in every corner of the earth. St. John to Santiago, Kerala to Perth, all keeping alive the fantasy what could happen down the line. Of the world combined. You can see us gathering early in the morn. Some are celebrating the shackles we have shorn, while so many billions are just waiting for a moment that we might stop losing the class war. When someday we can all say, yeah, we're doing fine. When the workers of the world combine. When that time arrives, maybe it looks like mating, like a festival that comes home and doesn't go away. Every race and gender, every walk and station, with the working class united, every land and nation. Then just watch what happens when we follow the same sign. When the workers of the world combine. Month of the year on the 1st of May, known around the world as International Workers' Day.
Another great song by David Rovix, When the Workers of the World Combine. And before that, you heard they all sang the Internationale. I don't know if I can pronounce it in anything except French accent.
That's right.
David Rovix's website is davidrovix.com. You can, of course, trace him from my website, nordenspiritradio.org. And you can also listen to my interview with him back in 2008. That's amazing that you've had this fertile period of music that just doesn't seem to end. Do you ever get writer's block?
You know, I guess there was That period of 2 years when everything I wrote came out in the form of a children's song. I didn't actually put any children's songs on this list of songs, now that I think of it. But yeah, that wasn't writer's block, but it was sort of like writer's block, because I wasn't intending on only writing children's songs. It just happened, you know. I mean, I was intending to write maybe one or two or something. I don't know what I had intended to do. But then once I got my mind in that framework of just looking at the world from the perspective of a toddler, and then I had a baby around, and that reinforced the whole practice of just seeing everything from that little perspective, you know. And I was really glad when I started writing songs for adults again, you know, which kind of happened as quickly as it stopped, you know.
Sometimes parents that are home with their kid all day kind of lose their grasp of English, the higher orders, the vocabulary.
Yeah, totally. You start putting a Y at the end of every word, you know, even when you're talking about adults. You're like, oh, is that your doggy? Like, oh, yeah, okay.
Well, let's keep going with some more music. As I said, I want to squeeze in a lot here, but folks, just keep in mind that there's going to be a uncut, complete interview with David Rovix on our podcast. For broadcast here, we'll have 55-minute limit as usual, but there's more riches in the uncut version. So what do we share next, David?
I guess two songs back-to-back next, which are the two songs that are in the list that are basically both songs I wrote in the past year or so that are related to Gaza and Palestine. And since the war began with the Gaza ghetto uprising in October 2023 and the genocidal retaliation on the part of the Israeli military, I've written probably about 100 songs about that, and these are two of them. The first is called From Auschwitz to Gaza, which is one of those comparisons that there were a lot of people, even lots of people who were, you know, very much trying to call for justice and, you know, for Palestinians, and call out the Israeli efforts to dispossess Palestine of the Palestinians. You know, a lot of people had shied away from making these kinds of comparisons. And of course, there's lots of very important distinctions to be made between Auschwitz and Gaza in terms of as a comparison. But what is shocking is not the distinctions, but the similarities. And what's shocking about the similarities is that both there are so many of them, and that this is a genocide being carried out by Jews exclusively, almost, who are, of course, being armed by, you know, our country, which is not run by Jews and is not, you know, it's a very much a Christian majority country with lots of right-wing pro-Israel Christians in control, who are the ones with their hands on the purse strings that are funding Israel to be the militaristic state that it is. But, you know, nonetheless, you have an army of Jews, many of whom are direct descendants of Holocaust survivors, who are carrying out a genocide. And in so many ways, intentionally mimicking fascist, German fascist, Nazi tactics and propaganda. And I'm not making this stuff up. It's all just real. I'm just talking about what's really happening. Anybody that thinks I'm making any of this stuff up is not paying attention to the Hebrew press, because this is all over the Hebrew press. And I, of course, don't blame anybody else for not speaking Hebrew, but they're not being secretive about any of this stuff. Israel is run by fascists. I'm not making this up. I mean, they call themselves fascists. I mean, Ben-Gvir, Smotrich, you know, look at these people and their record and what they're doing. And you tell me what a fascist is and isn't, you know. But that's what's happening. And we're funding it, which is what the second song in this couplet is about, The War Machine, which is about the five corporations in the United States that are the ones supplying Israel with all the bunker busters that they are using to demolish apartment buildings and slaughter massive numbers of children.
Can you tell me about who you're making this music with? I think Laura Love is in The War Machine, and Chet Gardner, I think, is part of both of the songs. Is Kamala in here with you as well?
She's singing harmony in From Auschwitz to Gaza, and then it's Laura Love on The War Machine. and Chet Gardner is all over both of them. And one of the things that happened basically after the war began in 2023, I started hearing from so many people who wanted to do something, you know, and they wanted to somehow do something about this horrible situation. And there were quite a few artists, you know, I was hearing from, and they knew and that I was writing songs about this subject, and they liked the songs I was writing, and they just wanted to do something, even if it was just helping another artist make their songs better that they're trying to get out there on the subject as a means of doing something to try to amplify this message. And Chet Gardner and Laura Love are two of the most prominent, I guess you could say, or the ones I ended up exploiting the most anyway, you know, who made their services available to me. And, you know, me and Chet have done, I think, I can't remember now, it's 12 albums together or something. And Laura Love was on, you know, was all over one of them. And that was also, you know, we were collaborating, all three of us together on that one very actively. And Laura had to move on to other activities, but very, very glad that she could do that. And it's certainly my favorite of the recent albums we've done together by a long shot because of her harmonies. I mean, they just really add so much.
So, folks, we're going to hear The War Machine. But before that, we're going to hear From Auschwitz to Gaza. And I just have to ask you one more thing before we go into this song, David. Your voice seems particularly broken on this song. I sense the full heartbreak right there in your voice. Is what you witnessed with respect to Gaza and, of course, back to Auschwitz, is that a particular damaged place within you, a hurt place, a place that you connect with all of those suffering people more than ever?
Yeah, I'd have to say. I mean, yeah, it is, you know, because, I mean, I've been very connected to the Palestinian cause and to Palestinians for a long time, since 2000. And I'm very directly connected to Jewish suffering in Europe in terms of my family history. And it's been just to see what Israel has done in Gaza over the past 2.5 years. It's just been so devastating to watch it happening every day. And then the contrast of watching this happening and just seeing the Western world continue and, you know, the Western media barely give it any coverage of the kind that it deserves. And, you know, it's been just absolutely devastating to the point where, like, you know, when my friends and relatives die, it just seems like I barely even have an extra tear to shed for them, because I'm just constantly in the world of death all the time. Everybody's dying all the time.
From Auschwitz to Gaza.
Camps open air, that's the one thing that distinguishes what is happening in Gaza right now compared to the time of the Third Reich and its crimes. Against any decency, against any sanity, against all the children, against all humanity. Auschwitz to Gaza. There's no difference between babies and fighters on that side of the fence, the side where they starve because the food is kept out by the occupation, and no others, no doubt, where people are dropping dead on their feet while searching for crumbs of food on the street. And all day, all the people inside just wasting away. Everyone waiting for death to arrive, shot or starved or burned alive, where each passing moment is punctured by groans of a million children as thin as their bones. From Auschwitz to Gaza, outside world knew, and many lamented about what they might do, while their leaders looked for money to be made in the arms trade. Once again, just like this, profiting from the apocalypse. From Auschwitz to Gaza, the stages of starvation are exactly the same under occupation. First the fat goes, then all the rest, the muscle, the marrow, the milk in the breasts of all nursing mothers, as in front of their eyes, their babies cry, their last little cries. Auschwitz to Gaza under either command. All of the killing is entirely planned. Whether they call it a camp or a zone, it's all the same skin and bone. Whether they say work makes you free or humanitarian city. From Auschwitz to Gaza, the political line. From occupied Poland to Palestine, leaders outside will say we weren't aware of the extent of the horrors happening there. They'll shed a few tears and somberly then make a speech at the UN. From Auschwitz to Gaza, all over the place, the lies of the leaders who seek to save face will say we would have acted if only we knew all that they claim they really would do. And no one will believe at the time when some foolish person says never again.
Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, it's the way they mow the lawn. The last one to add to the mix, that's General Dynamics. Together in the Holocene, they're the war machine I'm talking about. The war machine that sends off the jets and missiles, laying waste to Palestine. Bunker busters, if not for these fearsome five, who knows how many children would still be left alive? What if we block the ports and never let them go? What if the people all said no? I'm talking about the war machine that sends off the jets and missiles, laying waste to Palestine. We got together and said this cannot be, that this slaughter is made possible by my country and certain enterprises they call defense corporations that provide the genocide heirs with all their ammunition. I'm talking about the war machine that sends off the jets and missiles, laying waste to Palestine. Of the old, what if we started by never doing what we're told? If we're working for the export of precision guided genocide, what if we built resistance until we turn the tide? I'm talking about the war machine that sends off the jets and missiles, laying waste to Palestine. Honeywell, make the war material, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, it's the way they mow the lawn, the last one to add to the mix, that's General Dynamics, together in the Holocene, they're the war machine.
You just heard two of David Rovick's songs. His website, davidrovick.com, you'll catch up with a lot of this. You can track down lyrics, by the way, via his website as well. And he's got a lot of words to say, as well as tears to pour through his music. And so we just heard The War Machine, and before that, From Auschwitz to Gaza, for today's Song of the Soul with David Rovick's, his first Song of the Soul back in 2008. In 2026, there's still so much pain to be channeled and so many things to be fixed. And I think David Rovick's soul calls for that work endlessly, as I think we heard through those two songs. Thank you for that, David.
Thank you, Mark.
We've got one more song, and again, there's going to be an uncut version of this interview on NordenspiritRadio.org. You can track it down through our website or any of the many places. We've got, I don't know, dozens of places where our podcast is featured. Maybe you're hearing our broadcast version from one of the 38 stations across the U.S. that carry our programs. Either way, you can connect with the full uncut version on NordenspiritRadio.org. So one more song, David?
The last one we got for you is I'm a Better Anarchist Than You, which is another one taken from my best of selections from the top five on Spotify. And to me, this song, the fact that when you look at, you know, one of the things that Spotify and YouTube allows you to do as an artist on those platforms is see where your listeners are, what gender they are, and how old they are. So there's certain things you can find out, like, and, you know, just under half of my overall listeners are from the United States, and most of them are under the age of 40. And, you know, just over half of them are male. So to me, it's a very hopeful thing that you got all these young people for whom, as far as like my music goes, their favorite song is I'm a Better Anarchist Than You. And I think that's so hopeful because the song, it's basically making fun of a lot of them. And, you know, they have a sense of humor, you know, and it's making fun of a lot of people that we all know, you know, in our midst who are always, you know, always have all the answers and are condescending and know-it-all and, you know, the preachy know-it-all left-winger types, which a phenomenon of sort of sectarianism is what I'm getting at, which is a big problem in reality, actually, and a huge problem. But it's a problem that a lot of people are obviously aware of, as evidenced by the fact that they listen to and like this song so much. When I first wrote the song, I actually was really worried that I was going to offend a lot of people that I know and love. And I offended very few of them. I was so happy to find out. Not only did I not offend them, but it became like one of my most popular songs in that very crowd. So I started touring around squats and, you know, anarchist associated venues in Europe and the United States and other places a long, long time ago. And it was after many years of playing in those kinds of venues that I wrote this song. And then this was the first song I wrote after St. Patrick Battalion that everybody was learning at all these venues that I was singing at. Everybody was learning not just the chorus, because in this case, there is no chorus. They were learning just the entire song. That was also the experience that made me realize that my quest to write a good sing-along, because, you know, on some level, I think, you know, everybody in my kind of position wants to be Pete Seeger, you know, and so I wanted, of course, to write songs that everybody would sing along to and would think were good sing-alongs. And that's, it was with this song that I realized a good sing-along is a song everybody knows. That's the definition of it. None of the other definitions are actually particularly relevant. It's just everybody needs to know it and love it. And then it's a good sing-along. You know, doesn't matter how catchy the chorus is. They need to have heard it before enough times that they know it all.
One of the things that's distinctive about these songs in the set that you chose today is it's purebred punk. And I have a son who plays in a punk band. And I'm trying to sell him on playing this in his band.
Oh, this is that. Well, this is the most punk rendition of it, too, for sure. This particular version.
Do you really think that you're a better anarchist than me? I just want to know.
Oh no. I think that kind of you know, thinking is so toxic. You know that of you know that I'm better than you. You know. You find it in all kinds of different scenes, and it's promoted in so many different underhanded ways because it's so divisive and such toxic thinking. You know, this I have the answers, and so we have to do it this one way. You know, that kind of rigidity is, you know, generally, I think, toxic for organizations and communities and scenes. And you know, what is needed is a much more welcoming, inclusive, you know, yes and kind of orientation, you know, and that's the kind of orientation that is, I think, often really being suppressed in all kinds of ways by social media algorithms and by nefarious intelligence agencies as well. And it's like we need a lot less sectarianism and a lot more inclusivity.
So I've got a button. I want to know if you think it's good or bad. It says, I'm proud to be a humble Quaker. Does that carry
wonderful.
The flavor?
I love it. I love it. It reminds me of what Utah Phillips said in one of his routines, he said, I left home for a tour, came back, and the damn Unitarians had burned a question mark on my front yard.
Yes. Well, folks, I hope you enjoy this. I hope it brings a smile to your lip. I hope it helps you self-examine. I hope that it helps us gather more arms together, because we need a social movement that's so immense and includes people all across the spectrum, the red and the blue and the anarchist and the communitarians and the everybody. We need them all together to help make a better world. And that's the way that the soul of David Rovics points. And I hope you get there by this song. David, thanks so much for joining me again for Song of the Soul. And I don't think I should wait another 18 years to have you back again.
Anytime. Looking forward to the next time, whenever it is.
I'm a better anarchist than you, David Rovics, davidrovics.com. We'll see you next week for Song of the Soul.
I don't drive a car because they run on gas, but if I did, it'd run on biomass. I ride a bike or sometimes a skateboard. So stop all you drivers and your yummy hordes sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat, I just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. You people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the birds watching you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather and I like my clothes in black, and I made a real cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think that is so. Relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to Andy Flag and Crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed readers, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in voting. I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy.
Although I said we'll see you next week right before that song, we actually have about 15 minutes more we can fill with a short interview I did with David for one of my Spirit in Action episodes on the music of the Minnesota Uprising. You'll find those easily on northernspiritradio.org, plus links to all my guests for Song of the Soul and Spirit in Action these past 20-plus years. You'll find the 38 or so radio stations that carry our shows, and you can shoot us a comment and donate to help make our work sustainable and powerful. We need alternative media in this country now more than ever, and you can help make it happen with your donations. Thank you in advance. And as a reward, here's more with David Rovics about his Minnesota Uprising song called If the Rest of Us Could Be So Good. I called David up, and here's what we said. David, it's great to have you back again on Spirit in Action. Been, wow, way too many years.
It's great to be back with you.
But you've been doing masses of music. You don't ever seem to stop, even with kids. How can you do so much music when you've got kids?
I've been lucky enough for a long time now to have avoided ever needing to get a day job. And I didn't even realize how many musicians had to have day jobs until the pandemic took all the day jobs and the touring away. And I discovered, oh, there's all these starving musicians out there. So when the kids are in school, I got the day to myself to write and read and So I can write a lot of songs in that time. You know, when they're babies, it's a lot tougher with time management. But once they're in school, you never see them anymore. Nobody ever told me that about raising kids. Like, they turn 5, you don't see them anymore. Like, I was waiting for, like, them to turn 18, and then you don't see them anymore. But I hardly see them after they're 5, you know.
So you do music in a couple different ways, at least. You've been using an AI aid, or is that an AI artist? How's it named?
They call it a music generation platform. I call it my AI band, which is a strange thing for probably 99% of the population to hear. But for that tiny less than 1% of us who have actually, like, recorded with a band in a studio and told musicians what you want them to do, if you've had that experience of being a producer in a studio with a band, then it feels like working with a band. It's so similar. And, you know, without the conversation, of course, and without, you know, getting to know people, and with everything happening much more quickly and the production values always being amazing, even if they're not necessarily coming up with amazing music every time, but the sound and the recording quality and everything is usually amazing. And then, I mean, there's differences, but a lot of it is a lot like working with a band.
So how long has Itsuno been a thing?
I was in Australia I guess it was about 9 months ago now. I was noticing this tendency of people writing songs with AI, and they were terrible. But I was seeing the potential, because the music was amazing. It was the lyrics that were terrible, and the formulaic quality of the music was terrible. But I thought, if it can do this formulaic country western with terrible lyrics, what if you gave it good lyrics and interesting prompts of the sort that you would give to a band in a studio, you know, to make things sound much more interesting than, you know. So when I heard this really bad AI-generated music all over the place, all of a sudden, I knew I had to start playing with this, because I could see the potential of a real musician who can write real lyrics, what you could do with it. And what I've discovered is it's mind-blowing. I mean, people are very resistant to it, and I understand the resistance to all kinds of AI, but the thing is, you can actually make really, really good music. And I think you have to have a certain degree of humility to admit that this is really good music.
Well, I'm asking you about this, and Itsuno, your AI partner for your band, I'm asking you about this because of the song, If the Rest of Us Could Be So Good. I saw in the notes, it said that the first release of it actually was on an Itsuno album. But an Itsuno album is a you album or not. I'm still a little bit befuddled.
Yeah, it's me, but I write the lyrics, and then I'm working with Suno to come up with the music. But I'm not the one singing or playing those instruments. So I felt like the idea of calling this David Rovick's album doesn't seem right if I'm not the one singing. So I just thought I need a different name for the albums I'm doing in this particular, you know, collaboration. But I wrote all the lyrics, and the amount of, I mean, it's the fascinating process that how much work and the kind of work that goes into refining the prompts to where you eventually get something that really nails it. But one of the things that's so fascinating about it is how similar it is to working with a band. It's like when you get the vibe, as a songwriter who I've written as a songwriter, just, you know, with a guitar and, you know, a notebook, I've written over 1,000 songs and recorded over 1,000 songs. And so I'm familiar with the process and how, you know, viscerally when you've nailed it, like when you've got the lyrics into a form with music that really works, that is really moving, and that is just the right vibe that you were looking for, and then you know you've got it. And I have often struggled with that, and I've spent days and weeks and sometimes given up on it, because I know, like, okay, these lyrics are good, but I just can't find the right vehicle for them. And I have on many occasions searched out other musicians for help with that, and I have gotten into playing different instruments, both for the love of music, but also just to change things and spice things up. And I've played with different tunings, both for the love of music, but also just to get out of the rut that you can get into as a songwriter after you've written a few hundred songs. You know, it's a challenge to come up with, because every new song has to be musically interesting. You know, people might think that the sort of politically oriented musicians like me are just about the lyrics and that the music doesn't matter, but that's not at all the case. any of the songs, if they're going to have an impact, the music has to be good, not just the lyrics. The lyrics have to be good. That's true, too. But the music also has to be good. And the recording quality. And you know, there's all these things that affect people. They don't know they're affecting them. You know, if there's no bass or drums in the recording, then they notice. If there are, they don't notice. You know, that kind of thing.
In addition to the version that was released by Itsuno or on Itsuno or by Suno, I'm not sure which way to say it best, there's also the release from the Ministry of Culture, which is you and Kamala Emanuel. I understand that album, Insurrection Act, has gone out everywhere now?
Yeah, now it's on all the streaming platforms except for YouTube Music, because YouTube Music deleted all of my albums last November and has never put them back. But when I put out stuff as Itsuno, they go out on YouTube Music, but I'm not in the algorithms as iTunes, so nobody hears those songs hardly at all on the streaming platforms until I record them as me. You know, so, you know, there's many tens of thousands of people have heard my album Insurrection Act on the streaming platforms because it's me, you know, whereas the number of people who have heard any of iTunes' albums are definitely not more than 1,000 people altogether, you know, so it's it didn't get on those platforms. It just doesn't get into the algorithm. But the album Insurrection Act is 18 of the 20 songs on the album are songs that I wrote with Suno and then learned basically as cover songs, you know, like as I would learn a cover song, you know. And that was a fun process, too, because it also got me out of my tendencies. Like, I've been playing almost exclusively in the open tuning Dadgad, you know, for the past 22 years. And learning these cover songs of my own writing, you know, forced me to get back into standard tuning, because it turns out most of these songs don't work in Dadgad. They're specific to standard to work the way they work on the recordings.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the song. And first of all, before we got on the air, you mentioned you'd been in Eau Claire a number of times, particularly at the campus here, UW-Eau Claire. And I assume that kind of across the river, 75 miles from me is the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I assume you've been there a lot of times.
A lot, yeah.
What can you tell me about Minneapolis that maybe our listeners who are all over the country may not know?
One of the things people may not know, because I'm not sure how well this is explained on a lot of the sort of national news broadcasts and what people know, but including a lot of these young journalists, not to malign young people, but they often just don't, they get dropped into some place and they've never been there before. And then they're trying to report on stuff that's happening. You know, it's a tough assignment, but there's a reason why in the Trump era, not only in the past few years, but before that too, and at other times as well, the cities like Minneapolis and Madison, Wisconsin, and Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, these cities come up a lot. And they come up a lot for various reasons. But one reason is because these are all places that have a long and still vibrant history of progressivism. And, you know, and like even the term progressivism was coined in that part of the Midwest, I believe. So places like Portland and Minneapolis get targeted by administrations like Trump's and others previously. There's other administrations previously that are known for targeting certain cities to get the kind of results they want. Nixon did it. G.W. Bush did it. You know, you go for the cities where you know that there's an active element of young people who might be inclined to throw a rock at a cop or something. And because that's what they're looking for, is that kind of provocation. So they can declare a riot and say, we need to invoke the Insurrection Act, which, you know, Trump really would love to do, but he never gets the kind of response he's looking for. Because, you know, in Portland, he got frogs, and in Minneapolis, he got whistles, you know. So he's not getting the riots. He's just getting a whole lot of solidarity from regular people who are appalled at the ICE raids, but they're not giving him the violence he's looking for. So, of course, they've committed terrible acts of violence against people like Renee Good and Pretty. But, yeah, it's a song about Renee Good's execution in the streets of Minneapolis.
And amazingly enough, before I heard your song, I didn't realize that bit about Colorado, Canada, and just, why don't I know that? I mean, am I really just ignoring the news, or are they just not bothering to write that?
They're not. Certainly, I didn't find that information in most of the national news stories about it, but there's other, I can't remember which sites now it was that I found that were getting into more detail about her background, but it wasn't that hard to find, but it wasn't the kind of stuff that was being talked about much. I mean, she and her wife left the U.S. initially because of Trump's election, and they were one of the many people who have done that, and I meet them all the time when I'm outside of the country. And then they moved back. And then they gravitated towards Minneapolis, I think, because of the scene there and progressive politics and art scene and everything. I know, you know, she was a poet. I don't know how many people from the rest of the country realize that Minneapolis is such a magnet. It's particularly a magnet for that region. I mean, you'll find most people in Minneapolis, if you spend some time there, you'll find that most people have an accent that belies that they're from the upper Midwest. And it's evident, you know, they may be from Minnesota or they may be from North Dakota or South Dakota or Wisconsin, but they're often from somewhere around there. And it doesn't have the same kind of draw that the West Coast has, because I assume it's because it's frozen half the year, you know, so it doesn't quite, you know, have the...
People here are cool. What can we say?
Yeah, but the people who are from there often stay there. And I think it's really notable, you know, that, and you can tell by the accents that that's the case. You know, they didn't pick those accents up as adults after moving to Minneapolis, you know.
Well, we should listen to the song. I mean, actually, I'd like to listen to a lot more songs by David Rovix, folks, but we got room for one here today on today's collection about the Minnesota uprising. David, have you been to the Twin Cities in the past 2 months since the murder happened?
No, I'd love to get back there, but I haven't been there for a couple of years at least. I seem to get to Wisconsin every year. I've been to Wisconsin for several years, every year. And so very close to Minnesota, but I don't think I've been to Minnesota since 2022 or so.
It would be great. We don't have nearly enough anarchist socialists visiting Wisconsin to Minnesota. We need more of them. So
more.
Each time you come by, it's better.
I agree.
Folks, we're going to play the song, If the Rest of Us Could Be So Good. And I'm assuming, David, that that good is meant to serve a dual purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually do hope the rest of us could be so good. The main thing that I take away from the experience with the Minnesota uprising is how good the people are, that this is more love and less hate than most places. And it's not that there isn't any anger or frustration, any of that, but that it's used lovingly to make the world a better place. And so I wish the rest of us could be so good. And I'm thankful that you captured it. And with the help of Tsuno, you made it into the powerful song that you're going to perform here again with Kamala Emanuel. Together, you're the Ministry of Culture. People should go to David Rovix. And what should they get there lately?
They'll find all my latest music. I do a newsletter so they can sign on to my Substack and all that. If they want to keep up on what I'm writing and recording, I send it out pretty much daily on various platforms. Content creator.
Well, some great content being shared here by David Rovix. It's a song, If the Rest of Us Could Be So Good. The other voice you'll hear singing right now is Kamala Emanuel. I'm so thankful, David, that you've been doing this work so constantly for so many decades. And people can come to NordenspiritRadio.org, follow the link to you, and they can also listen to the interviews I've done with you before. Thanks so much, David.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Here is If the Rest of Us Could Be So Good.
She was born in Colorado and she died in Minnesota, leaving her wife and three kids. Horrified by the election, they moved to Canada, but they moved back, that's what they did. And when ICE came for her neighbors, she came out to do what she could. If the rest of us could be so good. Some people hunker down and hope it will end soon, while other people just have to try. Some folks join the choir, just hope to stay in tune. Other folks just can't stand by. And when they come in to take people away, some of us just must do as they should. If the rest of us could be so good. Take on the kind of worldview that at its heart is all about.
If you want to make a country great, then you have to kick a whole lot of people out. While other folks think in terms of solidarity, and thus the world may be understood, if the rest of us could be so good. If the rest of us could be so good. If the rest of us be so good.
The theme music for Song of the Soul is by Chris Williamson, and it is called Song of the Soul. Check out all things Song of the Soul on northernspiritradio.org, guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Send your Songs of the Soul to me, Mark Helpsmeet, via the info on our website, and join us weekly for Song of the Soul.